Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off with the Green Bay Packers future. How does Aaron Rodgers play into the next coaching hire? What's next for Mike McCarthy? We got you covered there. And then Jenny and Connor come in for the news. And as always, we'll wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back into the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. Week 13 is in the books, and there's one place to start after week 13, and that's in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where for the first time in 13 years, there will be a coaching search. That coaching search is actually already underway, and I don't think anybody was shocked that this was it for Mike McCarthy. The timing caught me a little off guard, and the way it got out caught me a little off guard, where you were looking at your Twitter timeline in the middle of 4 o'clock games on Sunday, and all of a sudden, boom, there it is. Mike McCarthy's out, and Joe Philbin is the interim coach. And I just think this was about what was best for everybody. And I know Mark Murphy used this analogy during his press conference. I wrote it on Monday morning. I feel like I've been saying it for a few weeks. This feels to me just like the Andy Reid situation at the end in Philly, where I don't think anybody thought that Andy Reid forgot how to coach football. I don't think anybody thought that Andy Reid forgot how to coach quarterbacks. In fact, he'd gotten a pretty good year out of Michael Vick in 2010. And towards the end, it just felt like it was time. And so what happens? Well, Andy Reid goes back, sort of reconfigures what he's doing offensively, focuses more on coaching, less on personnel. And all of a sudden, 6 years later, everybody's talking about him like he's one of the most one of the foremost offensive minds and one of the most forward-thinking guys in the sport. And no one was talking about him that way 6 years ago. And there was questions about whether the game had passed him by. It hadn't. But I think taking the step back and resetting things really helped Andy. And where did the Eagles go? Well, the Eagles went through the Chip Kelly era, which, contrary to popular belief, wasn't all bad. They won 10 games 2 years in a row. I think the people at the upper reaches of the organization learned a lot going through that. They fired Chip after 3 years, and they win a Super Bowl 2 years after that. And so if there's a blueprint here, and I'm going to bring Connor and Jenny in now because I want to talk to you guys about the totality of the Packers situation. Like, it doesn't feel like it feels like that when you make a move like this, like the blueprint for what the way this should wind up is that, like, you know, it winds up, the fallout winds up looking like Philly did. Although I will say one key difference is, because of the age of the quarterback, I don't know that they've got the leeway to slip up with their next hire the way that Philly maybe did.
Yeah, that's a good counterpoint. And, you know, one part of the whole situation there that's interesting too is sort of there's been a lot of focus on, you know, Rodgers and McCarthy, their relationship, and, you know, maybe getting a fresh voice in there is sort of what Mark Murphy had said in his press conference. But, you know, what exactly is going on with Aaron Rodgers is a big question, yeah, too, because, yep, talking to other coaches around the league, when they watch Rodgers, they don't see the same accuracy out of him. And that's always been his hallmark, right? He has these pinpoint passes. He's been missing throws. Was that, you know, obviously part of how a quarterback plays is coaching. That's not all of it. But I think that is a big part of the equation that hasn't gotten as much discussion or dissection. And that will be interesting going forward. Obviously, we know his talent level. Obviously, it's an ideal situation because he's there. But what were all of the contributing factors that led to the slide in play? You know, he had the injury early on, but he seemed to be healthier in recent weeks. But he never got back to that form that we expected.
And I think that there's room for shared blame here. I know a lot of people want to look at this and say, well, what McCarthy is doing is outdated, and, you know, he hasn't done enough to update the offense and get it where it needs to be and all of this different stuff. I'm with you. I think Aaron shoulders some of the blame here too. Like, you can see a guy who's not following coaching out there right now. You can see a guy who, for better or worse, and maybe it's maybe it's because McCarthy's lost it. I don't think that's the reason, but maybe that's because Aaron recognizes that McCarthy's lost it, can't call plays anymore, and he's taking matters into his own hands. Like, I don't think that that's it, but I think all you got to do is watch him and see how quickly he bails out of the pocket, see how quick he is to sort of go off script.
Throw the ball away.
I mean, that's what's so remarkable about it is, like, you heard the rumblings for a couple of years about the friction between the two. I think now it's the point where you can actually see it when you turn on their games. Like, just the way he operates out there, he looks like a different player. And so I think Connor, for that reason, like, he has to shoulder some of the blame here too. And I think it's on him, whoever the next coach is, it's on him now to take the coaching, to be open-minded, to listening to somebody else, to be open-minded to the idea that, hey, like, maybe it's not best that I'm just doing my own thing out here.
Yeah, and, you know, I think Aaron falls into that category of NFL quarterbacks who are the highest paid players on their team, but not necessarily the nucleus, the nerve center, the leader, you know, that everybody looks to. And I think that, you know, he deserves a large portion of the blame for this breakup, obviously. But I also think that he's got to shoulder a lot of stuff moving forward now, too, because the new head coach that comes in, this isn't a learning experience. This is, you have 3 years to win us another Super Bowl, or you're going to get fired again, maybe less than that, you know? And this is going to be a job that I don't think a lot of coaches are going to trip over themselves to take, because
there's a lot of pressure. Like,
there's a ton of pressure.
There's a pressure on the Packers to get it right, and then there's pressure on the guy who's coming in, because now, like, you walk in, like, the clock's ticking.
You have to pacify Aaron Rodgers, which I'm sure that any coach that's going to take this job is going to call Mike McCarthy, is going to call Ben McAdoo, is going to call Joe Philbin and talk to these guys about what he puts you through as a head coach. And it's significant, you know? It is a lot of work just to make him ready for the game, you know, just to make sure that he feels like he needs to feel before a game on Sunday. And so, you know, everyone that's saying, that's putting this job at the top of the market, and saying that this is the most desirable job out there, I don't think it is.
I mean, I think it's boom or bust. You know what I mean? Like, it's either going to be an incredible success, like, incredible for the next coach, or it's going to be a spectacular disaster.
You're going to burn the final 3 years of Rodgers' athletic prime, right? I mean, that's the pressure. That's what's on the line.
Right. And I think it can be attractive if you look at it, like, and you say, okay, if you think you can coach Aaron, if you think you're capable of getting through to him, if you think you can do what Mike McCarthy couldn't do the last few years, then you can look at it and you can say, well, I get maybe 5 years of Aaron Rodgers, and I also have like a 5-year runway to find the next one, which is great. But like you said, it's, can you get through to him? Because it's not that simple. Like, I don't think it's – I think Aaron's very much, and you guys have been around him too, like, I think he's very much a why guy. You know what I mean? Like, don't just tell me to do something. Tell me why I'm doing it and sell me on it, you know? And so I think that's going to be part of it too, is whoever comes in there is going to not just have to tell Aaron what to do. It's going to be like, no, this is why this is going to work for you.
Yeah, and, you know, a new coach doesn't automatically reset a locker room culture, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've
yeah.
seen that with the Giants, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the last few years, it doesn't automatically happen. And so if that culture is off, which it seems to be, they don't all seem to be on the same page, you know, Rodgers seems frustrated with some of the young players that aren't, you know, performing up to the level of guys he's used to having around him. Perhaps some of the young players are frustrated too, that maybe they don't feel the same belief in him from him. So I think, you know, there's a lot of challenges. And, you know, if you're a guy like Josh McDaniels, who's been waiting and waiting for an opportunity, do you choose the pressure cooker as your next opportunity? And I think that's a really big question.
I think Cleveland's a better job.
I think it might be as well.
I said this last week. I think Cleveland's
a better
job.
I mean, the expectations are also lower in Cleveland. You go to the playoffs once,
I mean,
and
like that's
you
the thing is, like, you're gonna have time. You're gonna have time to establish yourself. Like, you're gonna have like legitimate time. Like,
am I the only one that thinks all of these jobs are better? Like, by taking the Packers job, you're essentially saying, I know right now that I'm a better coach than Mike McCarthy. And, you know,
who went to the playoffs, what, 8 years in a row?
Who went to the playoffs eight years in a row?
Who
has the best record in the NFC since 2006?
Yeah.
Who won a Super Bowl.
And it's not a cakewalk of a division.
No. Yeah. I mean, I would rather coach in Tampa Bay. I'm serious. I mean,
I don't know about that. I don't know if I go that far.
You did just say Cleveland's a better job,
but Cleveland. But, Cleveland. But all right. So
Cleveland,
you're dealing with the stigma.
I get it. Yes.
If you're okay with Jimmy Haslam, I think
that's
Cleveland.
That's right. That's the big issue. Yeah. That's the big question there, right? You know.
Tampa Bay, just get a nice condo downtown.
What did Darrell Revis say?
Get a nice 5-year deal.
Get a year in the palm trees, you know.
No state income tax. I think, like, I think you're right. Like, I just, I think the question is, can you get through to Aaron? And like, I don't think that's a layup. Like,
I don't think it's a half court shot.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, this guy is noted. I mean, there have been hundreds of stories written about this. Arguably the most complicated player in the NFL mentally, you know,
diva.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would just say he operates on a level. You know, I think that the comparisons have been made to Michael Jordan, the way that they think, you know, the way that they compete, the way that they motivate themselves.
Right.
And he wasn't an easy guy to coach either.
Jordan's problem was always that he expected everybody to operate the same way he did. And like, that's, it was an impossible expectation for most people. Right. Like, and that's, I think that's often the problem with people who are like some of the all-time greats, like that's like why a lot of those guys have trouble relating with other people sometimes, is because other people just aren't wired the same way that they are.
And this is, I mean, that is a reason why Josh McDaniels is a good idea there, because he has worked with Brady. And Rodgers are friends. He's got that immediate trust. I imagine Rodgers would probably send him voice memos that end in babe, much like Brady does. So you can see that they could have a similar working relationship.
That's a good point. Like, I think that Brady, like, his work with Brady would probably give him credibility with Aaron, which at least is a start.
Absolutely.
Which is at least a start. All right.
Absolutely.
We're going to jump into the news now. And normally most of this stuff's lighthearted, but this week we have to start with the very serious situation. And news item number one for the week. On Friday, video surface of Kareem Hunt. This was on TMZ, just to properly credit them. Assaulting a woman at a Cleveland hotel and apartment complex. The Chiefs released Hunt hours later. You know, guys, my big takeaway from this is just, like, I continue to feel like the NFL and its teams are driven by PR in these situations. And it's not just the video. It's the way that the public receives these things. And here's what I mean by that, okay? What we know now, the NFL tried to get the video. The Chiefs didn't. The Chiefs talked to Kareem Hunt. The NFL didn't. By definition, you're not pulling every lever, okay? Now, if you compare this to the way that they were and how dogged they were in the Ezekiel Elliott case, like, it's not even close.
Tom Brady.
What does the Tom Brady case and the Ezekiel Elliott case have in common? They were in the news. Like, people were talking about it, and it was a constant subject of conversation, and it was on the Sunday morning shows, and it was talked about during the off season, and these were big box stories from a media standpoint. And so what was Kareem Hunt? I'd forgotten, to be honest with you. Like, I totally forgot about, like, what happened in February. Like, that's how far I think it was. And maybe I'm alone, but I don't know. Were you guys, I hadn't even thought about it.
It was not on my radar. I agree. It wasn't a big topic of conversation. I think Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk wrote a very smart post, and this was something that also came up when we had been talking about the LaShawn McCoy case with the home invasion investigation. His point was the NFL's approach for now is to sort of only make things a big issue when they have to. They've tried to strike this middle ground between Ray Rice and Ezekiel Elliott, which, to be clear, the Kareem Hunt is not a case of intimate partner violence. So we should not liken it in the regard that they're not all domestic violence. So that's an important point of clarification. But for things that fall under the personal conduct policy, which all of them were, his point was they only make a big deal out of it when they sort of feel like they have to, right? So they don't want to be in a situation where they don't do anything, like the Ray Rice situation, and they don't want to be in a situation where they're continually driving the conversation by throwing all these resources behind it like they did in Elliott. So their solution is to sort of, okay, if, you know, let's see if we can do enough to sort of, so we can say, okay, well, we didn't know about the video, but now we're diving into it. They're trying to strike this middle ground, which, to be clear, I do not agree with. I do not think that's the right way to go. You need to have some measure of consistency. If you say you're going to investigate, you need to go through the steps of investigating and contacting the people involved. But I do think he's right. That does seem to be the middle ground that they're aiming for, because they saw that both approaches, they got a lot of backlash.
But what you're explaining, though, is like, PR strategy.
Right. Correct. It's PR strategy. It's PR strategy. And when you're caring about money, it's not the right way to run a business.
And that's what bugs me about it, is like, there are certain things that happen in the NFL and in pro sports in general where, you know, PR strategy is called for, right? Like, there are certain things that happen that, like, you know, if a guy gets into a bar fight or something like that,
or maybe a locker room dust up,
I understand why you're employing PR strategy. And to me, then there's a line where it's like, when you're on the other side of that line, you should be governed by right and wrong. Like that little thing your parents give you when you're 5 years old, where you can just point at something and you know, like, this is right and this is wrong. And to me, like, these cases are like that they meet that standard where it's like they should be governed by what's right and wrong. And I think the NFL, and it seems simple, right? But I think like the NFL would have saved themselves a lot of it, like could have saved themselves a lot of problems over the last 5 years if they just let that govern them. Like in these cases, and in cases that fall under domestic violence, violence against women, like let right and wrong govern you. And let like because I think we all know, like, right, like the, I'm sure people at the NFL knew, like, we probably shouldn't drop this, guys. Like, we like this is like we probably should look more into this. Instead, I think the approach was, in my perception of it was, it falls out of the public consciousness, right? And then it's like, you know, it'll just go away. It'll just like that. That's what it was. Like, it'll just go away. Like, no one will bring it up again. There weren't any charges filed. No big deal. It's over, right? And then 4 months later, the same freaking dude gets into a fight in a parking lot. And it's like they had a second chance at it to like, let, okay, like we probably should look at that. And we should probably go back and look at that incident. But we should probably like look at, into what happened in February again. And they blow through that stop sign. And it's just like there's like it's just in these situations, it's like if you let right and wrong govern what you're doing, this dude's doing some bad things, and we should probably just take a like for our own sake, take a look into what's going on here. Instead, it was like just sort of this hoping that it would go away.
And now you have this situation where this I don't know what you call it, laissez-faire approach has created the Reuben Foster situation. Yep. Where we ESPN talked about that for about a quarter of Monday Night Football. Yep. And before the game last night. And then you have, after that happened, you have Kareem Hunt wanting to go on TV immediately after, and what felt to me like sort of a pretty naked attempt at, hey, claim me on waivers on Monday, you
right.
know? I mean, I can handle this.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
And it's just...
Crisis like, management, which is an arm of PR.
And it's just like, you know, why... I think that the situation, the way that they handled it, emboldened either Kareem Hunt's people or Kareem Hunt, who ESPN said requested the interview, to put himself out there that soon, to feel like he was ready to face yeah. a camera and to say, oh, yeah, I can play for another team. I deserve another chance. I'm going to work my way back, when there's not nearly enough time to understand the gravity of the situation.
Right.
The NFL didn't treat it that way. The Chiefs didn't treat it that way. And yeah. so, you know, we're just in this gross sort of purgatory right
just
now.
Consider this, right? So how different were the last 2 weeks from 2014? Okay. How different was this really? All right. You've got the repeat offender. It was Greg Hardy then. It's Reuben Foster now. Right? You have the video, Hunt now, Rice then. I'm not arguing about severity. I'm just putting this out there, okay? Hunt now and Rice then. And then you have a child abuse case, which is Peterson now, and everybody forget, like we're not even talking about this anymore. He played like was on national TV last night, wasn't even brought up. Adrian Peterson admitted to Bleacher Report, I still hit my kid with a belt. Like,
yeah.
So you have all three of these things happening within a 2 week period. The reaction,
two on the same team.
The reaction isn't close. The reaction isn't close to where it was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing, because it like feels like we're normalizing it now.
Here's where I think is the greatest failing, is that, you know, you have these, you have this huge business, right? You're making money. These players are the heart of the league, and many of them never do anything wrong. But when there is a case like this, you are failing the players. By ignoring a case, you're not getting them help when their behavior could potentially have the help for correction, intervention, right?
Yep.
If Kareem Hunt has one incident and you take it seriously and you go through the investigation and there are some kinds of consequences, you can start getting him the anger management, the counseling. Now, right now, we have a situation where there was a third one that was reported last night, a nightclub incident in which no charges were filed. But there have been three incidents within the last year that his name was attached to. And he admitted in his ESPN interview he has not received any kind of counseling
yeah,
to this point.
Right.
So this is where you're failing players forget about us and our discomfort between watching guys, you know, when you know certain things about it. Think they're failing the players because they're not giving them any opportunity to go fix the things they need to work on, right? That they created this this commissioner exempt list and they have all these things, but it's, you're not helping, you're not taking these things seriously and saying this is an issue that, you know, you need to go back to counseling to learn how to discipline your child, and you need to go to anger management so you don't hit another person. You're ignoring these situations, not getting the players help, and then setting up for other situations for people to get hurt.
And I'll say this too: you take it to another level, you're failing all the other players too. Because if you tolerate this stuff and you let this stuff go, you know what happens? The general public, not people like me or you two, that like no, like not the people who are locked in on football on a day to day basis and understand the way this works. The casual fan's going to look at it and, you know, what's his picture of what a pro football player is? If you're not taking this seriously and these guys remain in your league and these things keep happening, you know what? Like, you're screwing the other players too, because 95% of the players are, and I think you guys know this, like, because you've been in locker rooms like I have, 90 to 95% of the players are good guys who do the right things.
Right.
And all of those guys get screwed by this sort of thing too, because now, like, this is allowed to become sort of how pro football players are viewed. What do pro football players get on CNN for? What do they get on NBC for? What do they, or MSNBC for? What do they get on Fox News for? They get on when these sorts of things happen. That's what gets the casual fan. And so I think you're also screwing the average player who does all the right things. So,
yeah, and I would just say I do not believe that there should be a zero tolerance policy, because I think that makes the problem worse, because it makes women less likely to report, and it makes teams more willing to push these things under the rug or cover them up, whereas if you were open about it and you could get players help, there has to be a path back. Like Tyreek Hill is a great example. Obviously, his domestic violence incident happened when he was in college, but he admitted guilt. He went through different counselings. He was on probation, and he had a path back. Now, if that had happened in the NFL, maybe the path back would have been different. But if there is a path back, you're more open about getting people the services they need. So that's where I believe that we should look at it as that.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry, that was, you know,
No.
I feel like, yeah. That was something, it was something that needed to be said.
Yeah. No question. All right. Now we can get to the football. There's no easy way to transition from one to the other. So Connor, just take it here. News item number two.
The Giants beat the Bears at home 30-27, surviving a Philly special call from Matt Nagy on the final play of regulation that forced overtime. A lot to unpack here.
Yep.
I want to start with
a strangely entertaining game.
The look on Pat Shurmur's face when the Bears recovered only the fourth onside kick of the season. And like it just everything has been melting down for him this year. And the look on his face was just like, I can't do this anymore. You know, like there's nothing else I can do. Odell Beckham kind of alligator arm that onside kick. And oh my God. I mean, just if you've ever felt for somebody in that moment, I think it was Pat Shurmur.
I think you got to give Pat credit, though. Like, this is like where the Giants were melting down last year. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if he's a long term answer or not, but I think you got to give Pat credit. Like when faced with like some of these circumstances last year, that team blew the bleep.
That's why they fired Ben McAdoo.
Right.
Was his inability to handle it.
Right.
I agree. I think this team has a different, you know, composure to it this year. And I agree with that assessment.
So where do the Bears go from here? I mean, I like they lose a game. They're still on top. I mean, they didn't lose any ground in the NFC North because the Packers and the Vikings both lost. But now they go and they got to go play the Rams. And we'll see whether or not Trubisky plays this week. And Chase Daniel was not good for most of that game, but was able to get the ball to Tariq Cohen near the end and set up the comeback and all that different stuff. I actually don't think that this was a horrible afternoon for the Bears, because clearly, like, this is probably one of their worst games of the year, and I still saw a team that was pretty resourceful and still and it didn't work out in the end, but it's sort of one of those where they kept finding ways to stay in it. And like I don't view this as a huge negative. Now, if they melt down against the Rams, that's something else, but I mean, as it stands right now, I don't view this as negative.
And find a way to stay in it against a Giants team that, yes, is very below 500, but if that's a team that gets a lead on you, is built to keep that. Saquon Barkley is arguably the best running back in the league,
which is crazy,
right now,
but he probably
is insane.
Yeah.
Odell Beckham has for a large part of his career been just devastating on those third and four, third and fives where he can get enough space to get that first down. Him and Eli were at least it seemed somewhat together on Sunday. And so that's a hard team to beat anyway. You know, they've had some bad bounces this year, and their offensive line obviously, you know, leaves a lot to be desired. But I don't look at it and say, oh, it's the Giants. I say that was a pretty impressive performance by the Bears to even put themselves in that situation. I think that's a team that, you know, you look at teams this close to the playoffs and say they either got it, they have this fight, they can climb back into stuff, or they don't. And I think that was a good example of what we saw from Chicago.
Yeah, they almost won two games without their starting quarterback.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm still bear leaving. We can move on to number three.
Okay, let's go.
On the Thursday, excuse me, there's a little bit of a typo on the prompter here.
Oh, God.
Whose fault is that?
On Thursday night, the Cowboys beat the Saints 13-10, holding Drew Brees in New Orleans' high octane offense to 176 total yards. So my first thought upon watching this game was that Sean McVay was having a great night, because this sets up, you know, a path for them to have the number one seed now. Obviously, you know, it's in their control. They have a tough game against the Bears this week, but it's in their control. My other thought upon watching this game was there were a lot of hits that were hard to watch. Alvin Kamara's hit was hard to watch. You know, Zach Lyon, who we did a rookie journey with on the MMQB, you know, seeing him stagger and stumble to the turf was difficult. His wife had their third child a week ago, and I just was thinking about what she was probably thinking at home, you know. And so those moments, I thought, really, like, those both of those hits really hit me.
Yeah. It was my big takeaway, and you definitely saw like the tenor of the game. My big takeaway of this one is like that's the blueprint for how you beat the Rams, the Chiefs, the Saints. Like you beat these teams by playing like an old school game, and I think the Cowboys are built that way. I think the Chargers are built that way to a degree too.
How many teams are do that?
But I think that's like the way the Cowboys play travels, you know. And I think that early in the year, they were it was all gummed up because they hadn't figured out quite what to do with their linebackers yet. And I think that stopped them from being the defense they could be, because how do we work in Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch and Sean Lee, and how do we get them all reps and use all of them and all of that? I think the Sean Lee injury sort of has naturally given them answers there. And then on offense, there's the obvious, which was everybody was crowding the box and trying to stop Zeke Elliott. Amari Cooper's helped solve that. And I think now you see a team that's like, conceptually, this is what they always wanted to be. Conceptually, this is what like Steven and Jerry Jones wanted. Like, you know, Dak Prescott's our quarterback. We're going to be a running team because of that, because he can bring a threat on both sides as a runner and a passer. And we've got a defense with a lot of good young players on it that we think is going to be better. I don't think they're going to win three playoff games in a row, but I do think there's a possibility they win the wild card round and then they pop either the Saints or the Rams in the divisional round. We saw the blueprint for it there. And then I think that team in the AFC is the Chargers, where when they get Melvin Gordon back, I think they've got the same sort of potential to be the running game and defense team with a better quarterback than the Dallas has. And so, like, I just think, like, the Chargers and the Cowboys, my big takeaway from that game, like, the Chargers and the Cowboys, and we're going to talk more about the Chargers in a minute, like, they're the two teams that, like, look like if there's someone who's going to pull an upset in the divisional round against one of the high-flying teams that throws the ball all over the yard, it might be those two.
My big takeaway was how those Raider first round picks are kind of shaving up right now. I think you're dropping into the 20s now. There really isn't a lot of equity that you have to play with right now.
It's not great, huh?
Yeah, I mean, both of these picks are going to be past 20.
They could be past 25.
Yeah.
If the Cowboys win their division and the Bears potentially, the Bears could get a bye.
Yeah.
Something of a
maybe that might be a little much.
Those are going to be essentially going to be high second round picks. They're going to have two second round picks for Amari Cooper and Khalil.
You really have your finger on the pulse of the John Gruden rebuild.
He's
very, very much into the John Gruden rebuild.
Set me up and spike it over the.
By the way, Derek Carr not playing so poorly anymore.
Okay,
Derek Carr not playing so poorly anymore.
Okay,
all right. News item number four on Monday night: Redskins backup quarterback Colt McCoy broke his leg, and the team lost 28-13, falling to 6-6. I actually liked where the Redskins were earlier in the year. I thought that there was like something almost like the Eagles going on, like the Eagles in 2017 going on there, and that they were really strong along the lines of scrimmage, right? And then Brandon Scherff gets hurt, and Laval gets hurt, and I think they've sort of like lost their identity now to some degree, and then they lose their quarterback, and it's over. Connor, you had an interesting take on this.
You know, I think that it lost its potency a little bit when every team signed a quarterback that wasn't Colin Kaepernick, and everyone would just scream at the sky, why aren't they signing Colin Kaepernick? I think this is a different situation because he's better than Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
He's better than what Mark Sanchez gave you last night. And, you know, I'm not just saying this because they put themselves in a precarious situation already in the public perspective and that this is some sort of, you know, counterweight to that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that if you don't make the effort to reach out to him, he is the best quarterback left. You know, you still have a 25% chance of making the playoffs. You had a 50% chance of making the playoffs before you lost to the Eagles last night. If you don't reach out to him, you're not doing the best to win. And I'll take that one step further. You have 6 wins right now. 9 wins might win that division.
Mm-hmm.
Who has the better chance of getting you to 9 wins right now? I would say Kaepernick instead of Mark Sanchez. And I'll take it a step further. Coaches always talk about how precious these windows are. You were in first place in your division at the end of the season. How hard is it going to be to get 9 wins next year with maybe Colt McCoy? Is Alex Smith going to be back? You know, is this team good enough to get 9 wins anytime soon?
They're in
after
like,
this year.
Yeah,
you know?
Like they sort of had the feel of like a.
I mean,
you guys remember the Atlanta Hawks back in the day? Like there was that like period, and maybe you guys don't remember this, but like there was this period where they were like perpetually like a 48 win team, and like the Redskins have the feel of that team that's sort of stuck in like they've got some nice pieces and they're pretty good, but like they're never like it's really hard to see them ever breaking through to the next level. So they're sort of in that purgatory.
But especially this year, like you were having an otherworldly performance from Adrian Peterson.
At this point, Josh Norman is
approaching 30. Like you're not going to be able to make this group function as a whole again. So why aren't you doing everything you can to win?
And you guys know, like I don't like. I do think that like what became of Colin Kaepernick as a player, and this is an unpopular opinion, but I do think what became of Colin Kaepernick as a player in 2014 and 2015 is a factor in like why he doesn't have a job. Like if he's a better player, I think he's on a team. Like I just think that
he's better than Mark Sanchez.
But he's better than Mark Sanchez. He's better than what's out there right now. And I think that bringing him in, at least in the short term, gives you an opportunity to do some interesting things that, I mean, look, and Jay Gruden, I've talked to Jay about this, like, They did movement things with Alex Smith, who of course has an option background, played option football under Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco, played option football under Urban Meyer at Utah. Like they've got it in their offense. There's stuff that they can do there that'd be interesting and different. And is it sustainable? Maybe not. But you're talking about 4 games, a 4 game sprint to the playoffs. I mean, why the hell not?
And like,
I know why not. I know why not.
Well, we all know why not.
But I mean, like in this situation, why not? I think the problem is the guy who's pulling the trigger in Washington is Bruce Allen, who's a business guy, and who's going to look at it and say, I don't want the backlash. It's not worth it for the last 4 games of the season.
I think there would be such a tremendous outpouring of people saying Kaepernick is finally back in the league. This team, I think that would outweigh it. There's both sides of it. I think it's a miscalculation. And also, of course, the counter argument is always like, well, you don't know what salary he would have, and you don't know if he could play after being out of the league. And it's like, well, no one's even calling to have these conversations.
Find out.
I do think the other part of it too, if you want to talk about it from a PR standpoint, it would probably help them with everything that's going on with Adrian Peterson and Reuben Foster now. Like it would probably to some degree like be a story that and I don't want to take those stories out of the news, but like there's a reality to that too, you know, where we've seen teams like this is a kind of a different story that you like kind of add to what's going on with the team.
I think if that enters your mind, then you're grosser. You're like a gross. I'm not talking about you in particular.
But you know the reality.
That's Washington, and that's
but you know the reality of it. You know the reality.
If that's
of
a discussion
it.
That they're having, then I think that the league is grosser than
you,
I could.
You
have
know
imagined,
the reality you know? Of it, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's
just,
so.
I'm just going to say this. Last night, in the middle of that game, when that happened, part of the reason that I wrote that they should call Colin is, you know, there was an offensive coach that I trust and I think that does a good job. And that was the text that I got. It's, why aren't they signing this guy and just running the ball down people's throats? Adrian Peterson is a monster this year. You could do good things. Like, this is a tactical football decision that could help you win games in December.
Right.
And they're not doing it.
They're choosing to not go to the playoffs.
They're choosing to not.
Because,
right. Exactly.
Because
yeah.
someone kneeled during the national anthem to protest systemic inequality.
Right. I don't,
it's really going to be looked at in 5 to 10 years. I mean, if it's not currently, as being absurd.
Totally insane.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, because I think that they're going to, I don't think we've heard the last of it. I think, you know, what you wrote is probably, there's going to be more noise. And it's going to be interesting to see them answer that question on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday, because I don't think it's going anywhere. And,
or will they answer it, or they just send Doug Williams out? You know, I mean, honestly, though, honestly, that's their, you know, that was their strategy.
Yeah,
with
and again, I think that there's been a tendency to make Colin Kaepernick a better player than he was over the last 3 years, right? Like, his last 2 years, he was very, very shaky, but he's better than Mark Sanchez.
Horrible team. I mean, that 49ers team was so bad.
But remember the way we were talking about him, like Harbaugh's last year, he got benched for Blaine Gabbert. Like, Harbaugh's last year, he got benched for Blaine Gabbert. I mean, this was not a very good player at the end, and playing for the perfect coach, playing for Chip Kelly, who should fit him perfectly. He was very up and down that last year. All I'm saying is, like, I think the revision of this is that, like, oh well, if you sign Colin Kaepernick, you're getting 2012 Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
That's wrong. Yeah. All right, but he's better than what's out there right now, and you can make things interesting. You make things tough on opponents by bringing him in. I think it makes all the sense in the world to do it from a purely football standpoint. I think it makes all the sense in the world to do that. All right, Connor, news item number 5.
No, I'm behind the eight ball here. Let me make sure there's no typos.
I can get it if you want it.
The Chargers rallied back from a 23-7 deficit against the Steelers to win 33-30 and keep pace with the Chiefs in the AFC West. I think that every team that makes a surprising run to a Super Bowl needs that good gif-able moment, and we got that with Philip Rivers, that zoom in on his face. What does he say? I think he just says, hey, let's go.
Yeah, yep. Which was interesting, because is he infringing on Tom Brady's, you know, LFG, you know, that came to mind there a little bit.
I'll tell you what, the thing that stuck out to me most from that telecast was the news of his ninth kid, which, like, having two, and Connor, you have one, it gave me a headache. Just the idea of having nine kids just gave me like a migraine.
It does make me have a little bit more of an appreciation for his longevity on the field. That being said, he has, what, a 3 hour I'm getting looked at
by... on the field.
On the field.
Didn't know where that one was going. Yeah.
That being said, I think I would be what does he have, like a 3 hour limo ride home from work every day?
It's like a movie theater. There's like a movie theater in the truck.
Two, depending on traffic. I mean,
you know, that helps. Good for him.
All right, so we got off track.
I thought the halftime turnaround was pretty remarkable, right?
Yeah.
Because this team, the last few years, has been fighting that same old Chargers refrain. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the ways that games ended have been fluky in the last few years. There's been kicking struggles. And so this was just sort of exercising all of those demons. Like, they came roaring back against an excellent opponent. And I really liked how Anthony Lynn described it at his press conference on Monday. Instead of saying, you know, he was asked the question, what did you say? And a lot of coaches would take the opportunity to talk about their great halftime speech. And he was just like, I didn't really have to say much. Like, my assistant coaches made great halftime adjustments, mm-hmm. but the players wanted to do this for each other. And this kind of win came from them. And I thought that was a reflection of sort of the culture that mm-hmm. they've built there. It's not a me first type of thing. And I think it has that chemistry that you see on a lot of good teams. The Eagles certainly had it last year. That's why they were able to overcome so many of the injuries. The Chargers have had injuries and they've had personnel losses this year.
The whole place polices itself.
But, yes. I mean, that is, and itself. That's why, you know, when you hire a head coach, I think Anthony Lynn's someone a great to keep in mind during this hiring process, because he was hired after less than a full season as a play caller,
right.
But he has that ability to change a culture and lead a group of men.
And your point, I think, is a good one, and that we're always looking for like the next offensive mind or whatever, and everybody wants a Sean McVay now. Like, that to me is not the most important part of the head coach's job. The most important part of the head coach's job is to like build a program and manage people and relate with people and be able to get through to people. Like, that's way more, because if you can't do that, it doesn't matter what you can draw on a whiteboard.
Yeah. I think, you know, we talk about, you know, the head coaching openings, how difficult some of them are. You know, the next head coach in Cleveland is going to have to eradicate, you know, all this, you know, all these bad vibes. Anthony Lynn, you know, I don't think we realize kind of how many bad vibes were in LA. You know what I mean? I don't think that we were giving him nearly enough credit for all the things that he had to clean out.
His first 10 weeks with the players. Like, they were still, like, people forget this, they were still in San Diego.
Yeah.
Like, they were still, like, they were in San Diego, like, basically a lame duck, which I don't think there's precedent. I mean, going back to, like, when the Oilers were in Houston for that 1 year when they'd announced the move, like, it's pretty rare that you're in that situation. They're stuck. They're all still living in the town that they're abandoning, you know?
Right.
And then they're sort of, like, vagabonds for, like, during camp and everything. They didn't have their facility yet, and like everything was sort of like, and then they start 0-4, and I think that's what's so impressive about what they've done the last few weeks, right? Because I think we all looked at the schedule and we were like, oh God, they're going to be able to run off this winning streak, and then they stubbed their toe against the Broncos. Well, how do you react to that?
Right.
They fell behind 10-0 against the Cardinals the next week, then completely ran them off the field. Like 45 consecutive points. It could have been worse. And then they fall behind again against the Steelers. It's just, like you said, the whole same old Chargers thing, Jenny, like there were opportunities for things to come undone the last couple of weeks where it was like they finally lose a game, their winning streak's broken in Denver in a tough environment. They lost that game in a weird way, and then they fall behind right away the next week. And like there were, what, maybe 10,000 people in the stands at that game? And they're able to sort of reel it back in and turn it in the other direction. And same thing on Sunday night. Like, I think it's impressive just the mindset of that team and how that team's handles everything.
And like how tactical they've been, like from a leadership perspective. Like, you know, not only do they have this brutal schedule where they weren't at home for like, you know, over 4 weeks or whatever it was, just in terms of, like responding to losses like that against the Broncos. And also, you know, early in the year, there was so much buzz about this team, how much talent they had. Every single time that came up, Anthony Lynn would be like, I don't want to talk about how much talent. I would notice the responses. Like, he really eschewed that narrative that this was a talented team, because I think that is maybe what's gotten the team in trouble in the past. That they figure they have a lot of talent and they'd probably be fine, and then they would roll to a mediocre season.
Okay, so I'm looking at the schedule now. If they can get past the Jeff Driskel-led Bengals on Sunday, then they've got a huge game in Week 15. Against the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead.
That division is not settled.
It's not over.
Have the Seahawks as well. So they have. I think the Chiefs have a little bit tougher schedule the rest of the way.
Right.
They both have the Ravens.
They both have the Ravens. And the Chargers finish with the Broncos,
which is they've been playing well, obviously. But the
that's
Chiefs
in Denver.
The Seahawks,
but
in Seattle. So you know, it's not.
But
over.
I guess it almost, like with that team, it almost doesn't matter where games are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they've like every game's sort of a road game for them anyway.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know,
very true. Yeah.
They're very, very used to playing in those sorts of environments. All right. We're going to wrap things up with Connor's fantasy update. What do we got, Connor?
So, you know, I think that we've spent a lot of time, you know, sort of directly or indirectly addressing some of the problems in our league throughout the season. A lot of my fury, I think, has gone into one person who stumbled. Obviously, the number one pick and getting Todd Gurley and then falling into the Patrick Mahomes thing. And, you know, we played again towards the end of the season. I was hoping that it would be kind of a nice little revenge thing for me to get back at him before it was over. You know, and I lost by 45 points, you know. But what really stuck in my craw was that he didn't play a kicker to mess with me. It was a thing where, like, he said, not only am I going to kick your ass, but I'm going to kick your ass by leaving,
so intentional.
Purposely leaving someone out of the lineup. And you know what?
Oh, that's so good.
I got to go home, and I got 12 guys to explain that to.
That's like that's like the equivalent of a coach going for two when they're up by 30, right? Like, isn't that the same thing?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
I just think there's a way to play this game, and I don't think that that's the way.
So you think the integrity of the game was sullied on Sunday?
I completely think that, I completely challenge the integrity of,
well,
of that matchup.
Well, in better news, Connor has officially joined my staff. Yeah. His season's over. The playoffs are beginning. We've got a first round bye. But let me just say this. I mean, we all know there's a lot of questions about his coaching acumen. So the biggest addition to my roster is not Connor, but we have a secret weapon, his daughter. She might not say a lot, but she's a force. She's our Ernie Adams, essentially.
Yes.
Oh, quiet, nice. But brilliant.
Yes.
And so
does she have funny glasses and give people weird looks?
We can work on her attire. They joined my she's sort of been helping me on the side because she saw the way that her father's season was going. So we had a big game Sunday night, and I would have to say that Connor's daughter was a big reason why I helped me steer to make sure I could secure that first round bye.
Wait, credit to Evelyn there.
So now it's going to be Jenny's fantasy update. Or we'll get a league fantasy update next week because
there is a consolation bracket that Connor will be forging ahead in. So we can still keep posted.
Is there money like can you win? Do you win something if you win the consolation bracket, or is it just for pride?
There's just no money involved in this at all.
That's right. That's not allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be
just pride.
What is gambling? Yeah.
So my fantasy team, I had DeSean Jackson in the lineup, which is a problem because DeSean Jackson didn't play on Sunday, and you know I don't know if you guys have been in this situation where you forget to set your lineup, and then all of a sudden it's 12:55, and you look down at your phone, and that's what happened. I couldn't get the app open quite fast enough.
Slow five minutes.
Now the good news is I came in 9-3. I got throttled, right? So I at least feel okay about it because it wouldn't have mattered, right?
I will say this: it's interesting that you bring that up. My first or second year playing fantasy football. I lost because my mom was talking to someone at church for too long, couldn't get home in time to put Matt Forte back in the lineup. Championship game on Sunday.
Oh.
And this is back before, this is flip phones. Yeah.
So there was
we had to run home. We had to boot up the Dell desktop, which took 45 minutes.
Did you have to dial up?
Yeah. You had to make sure everyone was off the phone so you could get online
Connor,
I actually lost on church.
Oh,
so.
Wow. Man, you would have thought God would have helped you out there.
Yeah, did you get an apology?
No.
No, you'll get those credits in heaven.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, we're going to jump right in the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call out on Tuesday for questions on Twitter. You guys ask, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit the little heart button there on Twitter, and you get an answer here. Question number one for this week from Robert Colton. That's at Robert Colton. Are the Pats good or just Brady and Belichick? They don't impress me, feel lack of talent. How many positions would start in the Rams? Robert, I think you're looking at this completely the wrong way. They've never been the most talented team. I think they've always sort of fit a vision for what Belichick wants. And that's why he's got a small draft board. I think he looks for different things than other teams do. I think they're always looking for inefficiencies. And so I don't think there was any point when you'd look at their roster and say, maybe with the exception of 2007, that's the most talented roster in the league. What he does is he gets guys who can do certain jobs for him and is a master at putting the puzzle together. So a lot of it is Brady. A lot of it is the fact that he can go in and he can MF his quarterback and he can coach his quarterback hard and do certain things. That enables the whole problem. A lot of it's Brady also in that it gives them a pretty sizable margin for error on getting things wrong so they can experiment and play with things a little bit more than other teams can. They can take games in during the regular season and use them to work on things. I think we've seen that over the first month of the season the last few years. I think you even saw it against the Jets a couple weeks ago. So Brady gives them an enormous advantage. He enables so many things within that program. And I think to a large degree, it is Brady and Belichick because Brady gives him those things. Brady enables the program because Belichick has a great vision for what he's looking for and it allows them to be a little less talented. But you still need players who are going to go out there and do the things you're asking him to do. And so a large part of it's Brady and Belichick. And I think as long as Brady and Belichick are there and operating at this level, they're going to be in the playoffs every year. I think the difference you get where you want to draw the lines at the Patriots is when there is talent in the roster, when they do get it right with the players they draft, the players they sign, that's when they can take it over the top and win championships. Question number two from Sam Bart. It's at SamBart89. Educated guess, which coaching candidate makes the most sense for the New York Jets, assuming McKagan is staying? My understanding is that Mike Maccagnan is safe there and that Mike Maccagnan will be involved in the selection of the next head coach. And I'm going to give you John Harbaugh's name again. Another name I'd give you would be Matt Campbell from Iowa State. The reason why I'm giving you these names is because I think that what they're looking for, what they're going to be looking for, again, it's what we just talked about, Jenny and Connor and I, about being a program builder, about what Anthony Lynn brings to the table. And I think John Harbaugh is great in that regard, knows how to set up a program, knows how to put together a team, knows what he wants to look like. And Matt Campbell, coming from the college level, is the same way. I think with both guys, the question would be, what sort of assistants are you going to put on the staff? And in particular, who's going to be your offensive coordinator? But I think that that's sort of the route that the Jets go. And so don't be surprised if it's somebody like John Harbaugh, if John Harbaugh is available, or maybe somebody from the college ranks like a Matt Campbell. Question number three, this is from DaBears. That's at DaBears_news. Have injuries caught up with Aaron Rodgers? Based on your handle, I think that that's what you're hoping for. And is there a Super Bowl window coming to an end? I'm going to say no. I don't think injuries have caught up with Aaron Rodgers. I do think that there is a reality that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger dealt with a few years ago, that Cam Newton, I think, is dealing with now, and where when you play a certain style, you're going to get hurt at a certain age. And so, you know, I think there are some things that he can do to probably manage himself a little bit better than he has, you know, over the course of his career. I think a lot of this, again, is going to come down to coachability, come down to having the right guy coming in, the right offensive play caller coming in, and a guy that he's really willing to buy into. That's when you're going to see Aaron Rodgers the Aaron Rodgers that we've seen compete at the highest level. That's what they need to find, a guy that Rodgers is going to respect, a guy that Rodgers is going to listen to. And again, you know, I don't think that Rodgers is blameless in this whole thing either. Question number four from Alexander Ward. That's at ACW 1993. Do you think the Cowboys have given future opponents a blueprint on how to neutralize the Saints offense? Yeah, there's a blueprint there. The problem is you need the horses to pull it off. And so, yeah, you can do that. Like, you can play a certain way, but you need to have, like, a really good offensive line. You need to have a running back. You need to have a defense. Like, this is all – I mean, you can go back to, like, the Super Bowl in 1990, Giants-Bills. You can go to the Super Bowl in 2001, Rams-Patriots. Like, this has always been what it's been in football. The way you slow down a high-flying offense, well, you know, you have a team that can play defense and that can slow the game down with its running game. And that's what the Cowboys are able to do. That's what they were able to do on Thursday night against the Saints. I think that's what they're going to be able to do in the playoffs. I think the Chargers are capable of playing that sort of style. But you need the horses to be able to do it. So it's very easy for you or I to sit here and say, well, yeah, there's the blueprint. It's a lot harder to actually execute that blueprint. Question number five, this is from Danny at Big Lope 85. Who needs home field advantage most in the playoffs out of the Saints, Chiefs, Rams, or Pats? Danny, I'm actually going to tell you it's the Patriots. And I know that sounds funny because they've got so much championship experience, but that team hasn't played on the road in the playoffs in 3 years. And that team hasn't won a road playoff game since 2006. Sounds crazy, but it's true. I think the margin for error with the Patriots is smaller than it is with the Saints or the Chiefs or the Rams. Like, I think the Saints have the greatest home field advantage. The Saints and the Chiefs have the greatest home field advantage of those four teams, no question about it. Yeah, I think the Rams is sort of like neutral. I just think the margin, I think the margin for error, and I don't think it's going to be a huge factor for any of these teams, but I think the margin for error for the Patriots, based on the way they're built right now, is a little smaller. I think going into, and I don't think it's so much about what's going to happen to the Patriots if they go on the road. I think it's what happens to opponents when they come there. And so for that reason, I would say the Patriots would probably need the home field advantage the most, because the margin for error is smaller, and because teams get in that building, and from time to time, you see them crumble. Question number six for the week. The last question for this week, and this is from Ralph. That's at Ralph's The Man. With the news that Cliff Kingsbury is going to USC instead of going to the NFL, which college coach, if any, do you potentially see that could make the move to the NFL as a head coach? We'll wrap it up there. I think I gave you one, Matt Campbell from Iowa State. He'd be one. In a dream world, Nick Saban. You might want to ask Jim Harbaugh. You know he can do it. But I would say if you're talking about realistic names, Matt Campbell would be at the top of my list. Matt Rhule at Baylor is another name that I think you should keep an eye on. And then there are two guys that that are going to keep getting asked, and maybe they'll eventually say yes. And my producer is not going to like this. Harry, you're a Northwestern guy, okay? Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is one, and David Shaw at Stanford is the other. Both those guys, the NFL loves those guys. But both those guys have very comfortable lives. They're coaching at their alma maters. They're from the areas that they're coaching in. They have job security for years. They've got job security like you wouldn't believe. They have job security that doesn't exist in the coaching industry. And so how do you get somebody who has that sort of job security, that sort of setup, coaching at their alma mater, isn't dealing with wild, out-of-control expectations, how do you get that guy to walk away from that situation? It's pretty tough to do. You're shaking your head, Harry. So we're going to wrap it up there. Appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we love your feedback. We want your feedback. We want to know how you guys think we can make this a better podcast. So you can get to me on my Twitter page, at Albert Breer, on my Facebook page, at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram, at Albert_Breer. And always, always, always remember to listen to all of our podcasts. You can get us all in one feed now, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. You get us, me and Jenny and Connor. You get Andy and Gary. You get our gambling podcast. It's all right there, one feed. You can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. It's right there for you. Same time next week. We'll be wrapping up week 14 at that point. I'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.